This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
We're following some breaking news into our newsroom here, fresh out of the White House, as Donald Trump walked out of the Oval Office telling reporters he had a good phone call with Justin Trudeau. We now know these tariffs against Canada, much like the deal with Mexico, have now been delayed for at least 30 days. In a statement posted to social media, to Twitter just a few minutes ago by Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's account, he writes, "I just had a good call with President Trump. Canada is implementing our $1.3 billion border plan, reinforcing the border with new choppers, technology, and personnel, enhanced coordination with our American partners, and increased resources to stop the flow of fentanyl. Nearly 10,000 frontline personnel are and will be working on protecting the border."
The trade battle between Canada and the United States was narrowly averted this week, as hours before the Trump tariffs were scheduled to take effect, President Trump agreed to a 30-day delay in return for various border measures. That brought a sigh of relief, but no real sense that the issue is over. Indeed, quite the opposite, as future battles over tariffs and other measures appear likely. Professor Richard Gold of McGill University's Faculty of Law specializes in intellectual property, and on last week's episode, I referenced his proposal to consider suspending patents in key sectors such as pharmaceuticals and artificial intelligence as a mechanism to counter U.S. trade pressure. He now joins me on the podcast to expand on his idea, explaining why there would be benefits for Canadian firms and frustration amongst U.S. firms that could spark domestic support to counter measures targeting Canada. Richard, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, I'm really glad you're taking the time to join. You know, as you know, as I'm sure just about everybody knows, the Trump tariffs have dominated Canadian discourse really since he was elected, and it's certainly grown in recent weeks, culminating at least for the moment over the past week as we record this, when the tariffs were on, then off again. It feels more like a temporary reprieve, though, as we've got 30 days, Trump says, to do certain things, and perhaps this will return yet again. The government announced some broad retaliatory tariffs, and we're seeing urgency around other issues like interprovincial trade barriers. But it certainly seems like it's possible that this could escalate again. And if it does, we'll certainly be thinking about some of the things that the U.S. may focus on, but we'll also, I think, want to be thinking about how Canada can respond. Now, just before all of this really began to heat up, you wrote, I thought, a really excellent piece in the Globe and Mail that I think should have gotten more attention, as you highlighted how patent law could be used to pressure the United States. So thanks for coming on to discuss that. Let me just start with the basic idea, and then I'm hoping you can really explain and we can expand. You wrote, and I'll quote, "This country, being Canada, has the right under both Canadian and international law to effectively suspend patent rights held by U.S.-controlled companies in key sectors, such as pharmaceuticals and artificial intelligence." Can you break down what you have in mind there?
Yeah, it's actually more complicated than that little blurb suggests, and I didn't want to go into the details for a general audience. So Section 19 of the Patent Act in Canada has never been used, but it came into force at the same time that Canada acceded to the TRIPS Agreement, trade-related aspects of intellectual property rights under the World Trade Organization. And then this clause has long-standing history, but it essentially allows countries to either practice themselves or allow other entities to practice patents for public purposes. And it's common in use in the United States. For example, in U.S. construction, they use this to build bridges that might have patented components, etc. So the idea here is we can use this same power that's internationally recognized, that's in Canadian law, to select those patents that get in the way of Canadian firms being able to enter the market. So I'm thinking of pharmaceuticals that are going to go off patents, let's say, in the next 2 years, where A generic firm has already started to do its work, ready to go on the market when the patent expires. Well, we can allow them to go on 2 years earlier. Or think of a tech company that has this annoying patent out there that they keep worrying about. And if given a little bit of time, let's say 2 years, they could leapfrog ahead of it. So the idea is to use this section. So you would need the companies to go to the government and say, here are some patents that are in my way. The government would then go to the Commissioner of Patents and say, this is a national emergency, please issue this patent. I would say at a nominal, there has to be some license fee, but the act doesn't say what that is. I would say under the circumstances, that should be nominal. And then the government can say to these firms, go ahead and practice this for, let's say, 2 years. If the tariffs go on for longer than that, of course, this could be extended. So that's how I was thinking of operationalizing it.
Okay, interesting. Is the 2 years that you now mentioned a couple of times, is that built into the act, or that's sort of the realm of reasonableness that you envision, at least as a starting point?
That's right. If it's too short, no company would bother, right? So it's a very short period of time. They'll say, well, yeah, 6 months. Well, the patent's going to come into effect in 6 months. It'll take me that long to get onto the market. If you're a pharmaceutical, a generic in that field, you usually start about 2 years before the patent expires. So I'm basing it on what is reasonable commercially for a firm to be able to invest, but not so long that once these tariffs are reversed, we're not locked into a system where all patents are forever suspended.
Okay, interesting. So what's the, you mentioned that this is found internationally and we've brought it into our own law. What's some of the policy rationales that exist to have this internationally, and you know, how much attention did it get, I suppose, when we brought it into our own legislation?
So, as I said, the United States uses this all the time. Defense contractors, when COVID hit and they signed contracts with Moderna, for example, they put a clause in there that says you are able to practice this. And when the Canadian company that had come up with the nanoparticle coating sued them, Moderna said, well, we're protected under this. So this has always been in use. Governments aren't going to go into the records of the patent office and trying to figure out which patents they may be violating. So they've set up this mechanism where they can easily use patented rights, and there's usually a mechanism to provide some type of license fee. It has never been used in this context, so this is new. Canada brought it in the late 80s, early 90s, in reaction or anticipation of the WTO agreement. Previously, Canada issued what are called compulsory licenses, which fall within this, as in a routine way. So all pharmaceuticals, for example, were licensed at 4% of sales. That was eliminated as part of the negotiations around TRIPS and around NAFTA 1.0. And Canada then brought in this section, which basically mirrors the language of the TRIPS agreement, section 31 of TRIPS, and but has never been used. It was thought about in the aftermath of the scare in early 2001 around anthrax that we may remember. The government said, you know, we may, Bayer had the patent, and we said, well, we may allow generics. They never actually thought about exercising 19 because no one ever used it, but it was available for a crisis like that. Similarly, the United States did that. So it's always been around. We also brought in a new provision, not sure why it was really necessary, 19.4 during the COVID crisis, which was really targeted at COVID and making sure that Canada wouldn't be locked out of vaccines in particular, but then treatments.
Right. No, I think, and many people, I think, will recall that. I think we even talked with Matthew Herder about some of those provisions back during COVID times. You know, you've used pharmaceuticals as sort of a prime example where this might apply and some of the issues that have arisen. In your piece, you note that Canada's had an uneasy relationship with patents. Can you talk about what that uneasy relationship has been like when it's come to Canada pharmaceuticals and patents?
So when the TRIPS agreement and NAFTA came in, there was an estimate, an economic estimate of the cost to Canada of increasing the patent rights that both agreements required. It was about $1 billion. Canada is very similar in terms of its market to developing countries. We don't have a strong biopharmaceutical industry. We used to have one, but now it's a branch plant. They do some clinical trials, but it's been a long, long time since they did serious work here and exported. And so whenever our patent rights get ratcheted up, it costs the Canadian healthcare system a lot because the public purse pays for a lot of drugs. If not, it's the private healthcare system that we have. So pharmaceutical patents in Canada represent a cost to Canadians. When Canadians actually want to sell product internationally, it's actually US and European and Japanese patents that count because those are the market. We're about 2% of the world markets. Canadian patents are basically irrelevant. I'm sorry, Canadian Intellectual Property Office, basically irrelevant to commercialization. There's some studies that that show this, that many, if not most, Canadians patent first in the United States. So the only effect of increasing, making Canadian patents stronger is really to increase the cost for Canadians. And we've made the decision in the past that it's worth paying that because we get other benefits under free trade. But nobody's under the illusion, I hope, that we increase patents for our own sake. And we can see this in various industries. I mean, think about the biopharmaceutical industry. They've laughed when we had like BioChem Pharma sold to a US entity. On the software side, our Canadian companies, Nortel, Research in Motion, all their patents were sold off to the United States. It's been very difficult for a company to sustain itself here. And so the Canadian government often pays through grants and research projects for the development of technology. We patent them and then sell them usually to the Americans, who then sell it back to us. So we're paying twice. We paid for the research, we're paying for the product, and we don't even get the economic value for our investment.
Yeah, no, and that certainly highlights why there has been that uneasy relationship in having patents. While sometimes a big focal point for some about a Canadian innovative economy, haven't really kind of sparked the sort of commercialization, certainly, that some might have otherwise hoped for. But before getting into sort of how this intersects potentially with trade, I just wanted to touch on the formality and the process behind this. I think you alluded to it, but this wouldn't be something that the Canadian government, I heard you say, would be able to take initiative on its own. It would really need companies to come forward to sort of say there's an opportunity here if you provide a support through this legislation. How does this process roll out?
Right. And I think this is actually an advantage, and I can come explain why. I think if you just did it all of a sudden, the power of it would be lessened. What you really want to do is set up a process so that patent holders in the United States say this is coming. They are then forced to lobby. Once it happens, just like when Canadians were faced by the newest round of tariffs, we suddenly mobilized and became somewhat anti-American. So the process I'm envisioning, this is not required by the statute. It doesn't set it out. It has never been used, so we don't have a process. The process I'm imagining that's the simplest is for the Canadian government to simply say we're in a national economic emergency. We've had many people already say that. Invite firms to nominate patents that get in the way and that they undertake that they will actually use that invention should the Canadian government give them permission under Section 19. You want to do that because there are a ton of patents out there. Most of them are completely useless. You want to isolate the ones that are actually in the way of Canadian firms and that have economic value. So why should the government go through the patent register and try to figure it out? Firms know perfectly well. So they can nominate these patents. They can do that relatively quickly. Then the government would take that and go to the Commissioner of Patents under Section 19 and say, I'm seeking permission here. We would like, this is a national emergency. Given the nature of the emergency, the license fee should be nominal. They get that permission. Now, the Commissioner of Patents, an independent person, but like any government official, is subject to the political environment. And I would assume the Commissioner of Patent, having the cover of the government say this is a national emergency, would issue these this right. Then the government would enter into agreements. I think they probably have existing authorities within procurement, for example. They just sign a very simple agreement with firms and saying, I'm going to give you a non-exclusive license to use this for 2 years and you're going to pay this amount. And then that's it. And the firms go off. So this could be done relatively quickly. I mean, government time, we're probably talking about 2 months, or it could be extended depending on the view of, how long it will take the US firms holding this to lobby Trump. Because once it happens, then you're in a different dynamic.
Okay, interesting. And so you're right, that buildup might itself be the thing that has the most amount of impact as it leads up to it, and pressure mounts domestically, which of course is part of the whole goal, even with the retaliatory tariffs.
That's right. And this is something that offers a benefit to Canadian firms, and we can show that it has it's a way to protect the Canadian economy against this warfare, economic warfare, and really, the U.S. firms will get notice and have plenty of time to lobby.
Okay. Now you made reference to international trade agreements and the like, and bilateral ones that we have, or plurilateral ones that we have. Is there nothing within these trade agreements that restrict our ability to do these sorts of things? I mean, in some ways, IPs become such a big part of these agreements. One would have thought that someone would aggressively try to limit our ability to use this kind of provision as part of those negotiations.
In fact, no. The United States is probably the biggest user of this provision. So, we always get the reputation in Canada of issuing compulsory licenses, which we almost never do. The United States does this all the time as a matter of routine. So, the United States has no interest in exposing itself to patent infringement suits. And so, no, it's allowed. There is uncertainty because never been litigated. What is a national emergency? What constitutes that? Certainly, health is put forward, a crisis like COVID or Ebola, but there's no particular reason when it's a full frontal attack on your economy that that's not a national emergency. And eventually, that will be, I presume somebody will challenge it, and eventually, 2, 3 years from now, we might have a court decision on it. I think the better view of the law is an economic attack is a national emergency, but if we're still in this crisis in 2 and 3 years when the courts solve this problem, we have bigger problems to worry about.
I think we probably do. And certainly the US is taking a pretty aggressive approach to some of those kind of emergency sorts of definitions to move forward with the tariffs in the first place, because it's
That's right.
based on some of those same kinds of principles.
That's right. I mean, Trump takes the view on a piece of legislation that's exceedingly aggressive, often illegal, like the birthright citizenship, but he knows it will take the court's time to figure it out. And it always surprises me that Canadians don't know how to negotiate using the same type of tactic.
Yeah, interesting. Now, one of the challenges it would seem to me is that if it falls to the companies to have to come forward, do we have the companies that are sufficiently independent here in Canada without ties to the United States that feel that this is something that they can safely do without facing some sort of repercussions for having done so? If you're an AI company trying to scale up, it may be that you've got US investors. It may be that you ultimately are looking to go to Silicon Valley, or there's other kinds of things that they're on the horizon. Do you think that there are risks there for some of those companies to use this, especially given it hasn't been used before? And that the fact that we haven't seen the large number of Canadian-based companies kind of really emerge truly and stick largely within Canada, that might pose a bit of a barrier here.
Yeah, well, let me give you two answers for two different industries. For the pharmaceutical industry, it's an easy yes because our generics are constantly in the fight against usually US control patents. For the tech firms, the reaction to my article has probably been strongest and most positive from that community. So they see this as something that's good for them. They have been asking for quite a few years, and Jim Balsillie and others around him have been talking about the importance of freedom to operate in Canada, that U.S. patents and the U.S. regime has imposed too high patent rights in Canada that impedes the development of Canadian firms. So I'm sure there are some firms that will be too afraid. They're Canadian after all, and that is often what's going on. But of course, if you're constantly afraid of taking a risk, I wonder about your entrepreneurial skills. I think there are enough Canadian companies that will see this as an opportunity and be easily, and it would be easy to explain to their US cohort, look, the government gave me this. If I didn't exploit it, I would not be entrepreneurial. It's nothing personal, but I would be crazy not to use this. So I think it can be managed by a strong leadership in the industry. But as I said, I've gotten the most positive reaction from that industry.
Well, that's interesting. And it may highlight not just the prospect that this presents an opportunity, but that lingering, it's more than even just lingering, frustration with the state of innovation law in Canada more generally and a desire to see action.
Yeah, exactly. Maintaining or obtaining freedom to operate in Canada is often more important to these firms than actually getting patent rights in Canada. They just want to be able to advance their technology and not worry about these behemoths in the United States threatening to sue them. Even if these Canadian companies ultimately win, they'll go bankrupt in defending a lawsuit. It costs at least $3 million just to defend such a suit, and many of these companies are running on a shoestring.
Yeah. Well, Richard, the first couple of weeks, I can't believe it's only as we record this, about 2.5 weeks since the inauguration of Donald Trump has really been pretty dizzying, I think, on a whole series of fronts. And one of the things that people have commented is that there's a lot of out-of-the-box thinking taking place. Sometimes it seems a bit crazy. But at the same time, it's pretty clear some of the rules are changing. And I think your contribution highlights how it's probably going to take more for the Canadian government when it comes to think about what sort of policy responses than just simply saying, well, we're going to do tit for tat tariff responses, because I don't think there's much doubt that the United States is going to do more if they continue down this line, more than just say that we're doing tariffs against Canada. They're going to start focusing on various regulated sectors and taxes like the digital services tax and a range of other things that may also be ultimately targets for US pressure.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And the problem with tariffs imposed by the Canadian government is it imposes a cost on Canadians. And what we really need to be creative in is devising mechanisms that impose a cost on Americans, but not on Canadians. And if possible, even provide a benefit. So that's how I came up with this idea, because it helps Canadian firms and harms them. And the places to look are pretty obvious. What has the United States asked Canada to give up in the past because they're trying to advance their own industries? Well, let's just take those away. Now that the United States is in breach of its agreements, everything is available to us. My solution doesn't even require us suspending the NAFTA 2.0. It is enshrined in it, as well as international trade agreements. And I think there are probably lots of opportunities if we just looked. And that was really the purpose of this. I didn't know whether the government would pick up on this particular idea or another, but we should be thinking about non-tariff solutions that impose a cost on the United States and not on Canada, and tariffs is not the way to go. I should also give a shout out to Cory Doctorow, because he started the conversation before me talking about more of the copyright field and how we should be thinking out of the box too. So I think there are a number of people in Canada trying to do exactly what you said, think outside the box, and who knows what is the best solution, but we should at least be discussing it.
I think you're right, and I'm glad that you've come on the podcast to come on and discuss. It feels like the sort of conversation across a range of issues that Canadians are going to be holding for the foreseeable future, to be sure. Richard, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you, Michael.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at LawBitesPod or follow Michael Geist at MGeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo LeBron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose LeBron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening and see you next time.